Academic Aesthetic for Thursday, March 23rd, 2006. Well, hello, welcome back. You're listening to the Academic Aesthetic. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, the Art Guy. And today I've got, well, hopefully something you'd consider a treat. I had written a blog post that I was going to submit to Rachel Amstutz to put on her blog for Discovery Educator Network as a guest blog, because basically she's asking for them. And I started writing, and I decided, you know what, this is getting too long to really be a blog post. I want my blogs to be a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. So I decided to just ramble on in a podcast instead. So I hope you like it. I found it interesting anyway. Now, a couple items of business before we get started with that. First of all, we have had a changing of the guard. If you go to the Discovery Educator Network's homepage and look at the resources section, it rates the top three most downloaded resources. Well, since the site's launch, my EduBlogging 101 wiki had been the number one downloaded resource. A couple days ago, I started looking at it, and I'm not anymore. Now, yeah, it's sort of depressing to not be number one, but I'm okay with it, really. It's something that it's nice to look at, but does everyone need to look at it every day? No, and once they've seen it, they know it's there, so why not get them a chance to see the other things that are popular too? I mean, you can't be number one forever. On the other hand, Steve Dembo shot me an email the other day with a link to our media's top 100 audio files. Turns out, my episode 29 is ranked number 8 at the time of this recording, and I've got another episode or two in the list also. I mean, how'd that happen? I'm ranked higher than Leo Laporte's Twit, and it's Twit! How in the world could I rank higher than that? Well, cool. For as long as it lasts, I'll live it up, I guess. Alright, that being said, let's move on and get started with the main subject of today's podcast. Now, my school system is implementing a program where every teacher will be getting their own laptop. It's not a one-to-one ratio scenario yet, but it's a start. Now, at the beginning of this year, they gave a laptop to every high school teacher. And starting next year, every elementary school teacher is going to get one as well. Naturally, most of us are extremely happy about this. Anytime we get a new shiny toy, we're enthralled. And many of the classrooms I visit, well, remember, I'm an art and a cart teacher, so I see a lot of classrooms. And a lot of buildings, actually. I'm in four different buildings. Oh, they sometimes have old and or non-functioning computers. And any initiative that puts more technology into the classroom is a good thing, right? Maybe. You see, some teachers actually don't want the laptops. Can you believe it? Sounds kind of odd, doesn't it? Well, there is a method to their madness, apparently. In asking some of those teachers why, the most common answer I ever got was, well, it'll mean more work for me to do. Well, this is a good possibility. After all, if your employer goes to great expense to provide you with a laptop, they should expect you to use it, right? I mean, what else would you use it for? Well, here's some of the things that they're probably going to have to use them for. Well, first of all, grade books. I mean, we already file our grades electronically, so a digital grade book on your computer for your courses. First thing that comes to mind. And that's not really more work, is it? I mean, gradebook programmers do all the math behind the scenes for you, so it should actually mean less work. You punch in the numbers and there you go. You spend more time actually doing lesson planning and getting ready for the classes instead of just figuring out what the kids have done. Well, you could do lesson plans on them too, but you know, most people I see who write up the lesson plans don't write them by hand anymore anyway. They write them on the computer because when you're handwriting, you don't have a spell checker. When you're writing on the computer, it's built in. So, keeping all your lesson plans on your laptop, again, a really cool idea, but again, not really more work. How about presentations? Ah, yes, PowerPoint. the bane of any teacher existence. Sort of. Ignoring my usual commentary on good design and bad design, and the free alternative programs that are out there, which I use because I don't use PowerPoint. Although, if you watch a presentation I do, you might not realize it. Well, if teachers don't have a way to show their students the PowerPoint presentations, then they're not really spending the time to make them, are they? I mean, yes, many of my buildings, including my base school, are set up so that you can hook the TV up to a laptop computer or your desktop computer. And my base school has that set up so that we can show United Streaming to the students. But not all my buildings are like that. Some of them don't all have working TVs in the room. Some of them, for one reason or another, don't have ways to show presentations to the students. So PowerPoint really isn't going to be that much of an issue for them. So where's this more work coming from? I suppose I should have clarified my questions when I was asking these teachers. Clearly, all of the uses that involve sustaining technology, which is technology that supports methods that are already in practice, will lessen our workload, not increase it. I know. It must be that disruptive technology. You see, disruptive technology isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's when the old way of thinking is thrown out in exchange for a new method. For example, back in the day, when I was younger, if you wanted to buy music, you would buy a record or you would buy a tape. And if new music came out, you'd buy another one. Well, when CDs came out, if you wanted that music on CD, you had to go buy a CD. So then you paid for the same song more than once. And a lot of people did that. Nowadays, if I buy a song, I don't go to a record store, or a CD store, or a music store, however you want to call it. I go onto iTunes. And I can take that MP3 file, it's not really an MP3, but that's a whole other story. I can take that music file, and if I want it on a CD, I can put it on a CD. If I want to make an analog recording onto a tape, I can do that. So I've got one music file that I can translate into a bunch of different resources. That's a new way of thinking. And it totally ruins the business model for most record labels. It's a disruptive technology to have MP3s. But I digress. Like I said, this disruption could be good or bad, but what it does is it knocks people out of their ruts and companies out of their business plans. So, hence the name, disruptive. It causes a disruption. Another example, blogging and podcasting. Those are both disruptive technologies that bypass the business plans that their grandfathers of newspaper media and radio media established. I don't have to be at my radio at 5 o'clock in the morning to hear my favorite show, because I can download a podcast and listen to it whenever I've got free time. I listen to podcasts when I'm hanging up artwork in the building, which is something very enjoyable to do, actually, because I can multitask that way. And for more information on disruptive technology, I'll put a link to Wikipedia's definition of disruptive technology in the show notes. So, back to this whole more work thing. One conclusion you can reach from this is that the teachers who don't want the laptops see the disruptive writing on the wall. They know that these disruptive technologies are coming. But they like the grooves they've worked themselves into. They don't want to be knocked out of those. They've got a system going. Even if the system is preparing kids for the industrial age instead of the digital age, they've got that system going, and it's less work for them to stay in it than if they got out of it. I don't really blame these teachers, really. I mean, when a disruptive technology comes about, it's up to that innovation's advocates to prove that the change is, in fact, worth the effort. as technophiles and blogvangelists and podvangelists and whatever fancy name you want to put on there, we are. It's our job to show them just how cool this stuff can be. It's one of the reasons I like the Discovery Educator Network, actually, because we get to see even more of this stuff. And we have it explained to us in a way that we can go back to our buildings and share it and show just how cool it is and just how much of a geek you don't have to be to really enjoy using it. Well, that's our show for today. If you want to send a comment or anything, there's more than one way you can do so. You can always send me an email at theartguy@gmail.com. And if you care to, you can also go to the Academic Aesthetic website, which is academicaesthetic.com, and leave a comment in the show notes. I do a lot of links and stuff in my Furl account, and I have a lot of text entries that I put in there as well, not just podcasts. So if you're not subscribing to the blog, and you're subscribing to the podcast, the iTunes, or another podcatcher, you're actually probably missing some things. And until next time, stay subscribed, and fare thee well.